This podcast of The Treatment is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM and webcasting at kcrw.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Bitter and ruminative usually don't make you a star. Look at me. But on the other hand, my guest, Hugh Laurie, has gotten not only an Emmy nomination, but has turned House MD into a real hit, and I thank him for being here. Thank you, Hugh.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you.
If you could describe, and I know you've done this a couple of times before, the character and the show for the listeners.
Well, bitter and ruminative, I think that's a good place to start. Probably a good place to end as well, because I'm very anxious about over-describing or over-analyzing the character, because I feel, in some sense, that's if the show has any fascination, it's partly to do with that, the unknowability of this character. And if we ever get to the point where we can describe him in a couple of easy sentences, we're probably it's time to pack up and go home. Bitter and ruminative is a good sort of chapter heading, but I don't think the chapter's written yet, and I sort of certainly hope we don't get to the end of the book for a long time yet, because he's an enigmatic, complicated figure, and I think complexity is good. Complexity is good. I love it, and I hope that it continues to interest a decent chunk of the audience, because he's a complicated guy.
But he's essentially a doctor detective. Would you say that's the best way to describe him?
That's right. He is. There is definitely a mystery element to these shows. He's a very highly qualified Uber doctor, head of diagnostic medicine at a fictional hospital in New Jersey. But there is an element of mystery. In a sense, the villain, the criminal, is the virus or the bacterium that he's tracking down. There is an element, a pretty strong element, of Sherlock Holmes in this character. I think David Shaw would admit that he's modeled House to some degree on Sherlock Holmes. And oddly enough, Sherlock Holmes himself was originally modeled on a doctor. So it's as if the whole thing has come full circle, because Arthur Conan Doyle, the author of the Holmes stories, was a physician. And he studied under an Edinburgh surgeon by the name of Joseph Bell, whose party trick used to be diagnosing patients and their occupations and their backgrounds and their failed marriages or whatever it might be, all from the calluses on their thumb or the way their shoes were worn or the missing button on the cuff of their jacket. And Conan Doyle was inspired by this character and eventually based the greatest ever fictional detective on him. And now, in a sense, here we are doing a doctor again based on a detective based on a doctor. Who was also a drug addict, as it happens, yeah. I don't scrape mournfully at a violin, but I have a piano. Yes, there is that mournful musical element.
It's The Treatment. My guest is Hugh Laurie. He's the star of House MD, which is on Fox. See, I'm glad you brought up Holmes, because I'm sure you've done it before, but I always thought that it was kind of an enormous sort of megalomania in Holmes and this sort of need to bring Watson, in your case, your colleagues, into whatever psychological state House is going through. Do you feel that's part of it too?
Yes. I don't know if it's egomania. It may just be incidental. I mean, in the first instance, Holmes and Watson are thrown together out of necessity because neither of them can afford to pay the rent on that famous set of rooms, 221B Baker Street. It's simply an economic measure that throws the two of them together. Thereafter, of course, Holmes completely dominates the relationship. In fact, one of the first things he does when they move in is to take up all the bookshelf space. And having filled the shelves with all his books, then turns to Watson and says, do you have any books of your own? And of course, Watson has, even if he did, there's got nowhere to put them. And in the same way, I suppose, simply by the nature of our occupation, the characters of House and Wilson are thrown together. We're both plying our trade in the same hospital, and we're thrown together in that same way. And I suppose, yes, House unquestionably has a very considerable ego, and has somewhere he has a picture of himself as a bit of a rock star. But it's if that is a foible of his, it's actually one of his milder ones. He has many worse than that. But I think I continue to believe that his better qualities, his finer qualities, more than compensate. That's my hope, anyway.
Well, like Holmes, he seems to be uncomfortable with emotion.
He's certainly the logical, deductive, analytical side of his brain, I think, is pretty overdeveloped. And I always get the feeling that it probably was overdeveloped at a young age. I think of a prodigious child who probably excelled at school and made himself unpopular for that reason. The other side of the brain, that warm, fuzzy, emotional side, the intuitive side, I think is the social side of it anyway. He has intuition, but the social side of it, I think, is possibly less well-developed or developed in a different way. It's misshapen rather than underdeveloped. There is a sort of mildly sociopathic element to House, which can seem dysfunctional at times, or it can seem just plain heroic at other times. I do find the fact that he doesn't need to be liked, I find admirable, that he's not at the mercy of other people's approval or applause or good opinion. I find that admirable. I wish I could have a little bit more of that in my life. I'm sure lots of people do. I think it's, we are all at one time or another, I think, oppressed by anxiety about what the rest of the world thinks. And I think here's a guy who's just decided for whatever reason he doesn't give a damn. And I think that's there's something exhilarating about that.
But we also want to believe, too, that the world should be ruled strictly by competence. And House is extraordinarily competent.
He is. This is the thing that a television show can do that real life can't, in the same way that we knew right from the first moment of an episode of Kojak who the bad guy was. So, Kojak's dedicated pursuit of that one guy was justified because we'd seen the teaser. We knew who it was. In real life, the cops don't know who the real guy is, and a court of law doesn't know who the real guy is. And in the same way, a doctor doesn't know what the real answer is until sometimes it's too late. So the question is, are you prepared to put up with this sort of abrasive rascal in the hope that he will lead you to the right answer? Well, of course, if you know it's the right answer, you put up with anything. In real life, we never do know it's the right answer until it's too late. In real life, House is not a viable proposition. He belongs in fiction. But I think, nonetheless, in fiction, in a fictional setting, he can be instructive and provocative and interesting, and can tell us certain things about ourselves. Oh, don't ask me what. I haven't a clue. But I think he serves a purpose in a fictional setting. In real life, I think, he'd be in jail, or he'd have been defrocked, whatever it is you do with doctors when you tear their buttons off and break their sword over your knee.
I think you put them on television.
You put them on television, yeah. Safest place for them, yeah.
By the way, we're not talking to Kojak. We're talking to Hugh Laurie, the star.
Right.
The star of House is the treatment. I guess I think about this too so much because just in the very first episode, and especially knowing the way that Bryan Singer likes to work, there seems to be something musical about House, and almost like in almost the melancholy of Thelonious Monk comes to mind when I think about the way he talks.
Yes. Well, Thelonious Monk would be a very good – that would be a very good choice. We haven't actually used any, but that would be a very good choice, I think. It's hard to put these things into musical terms. And sometimes, of course, when you're faced with the practicalities of actually just getting on and shooting something, one doesn't really have the time to reflect in those terms and discuss it in musical terms. But I think you're right. There is something musical about House. And I don't know whether it's simply because of that background of Holmes's violin playing, or the fact that I can tinkle on the piano a little bit. I think there is more to it than that. There is a poetic side to House. In spite of his cold, analytical brain, he has a poetic side. I suspect it's a non-verbal poetical side. He can't necessarily express himself to his friends and loved ones, if he has any, in words. But I think music is, it is a language for him. And by all means, let it be Thelonious Monk. That would be an excellent choice. But there is a, I must say, when I read the scripts, I always immediately have a very immediate response to the to the notes. I mean, they're tones as well as rhythms, but the actual notes of a particular speech or a sentence or a phrase, they just think, no, it's got to be like that. It's definitely got to be like that, and it's got to be done in that rhythm. And this is almost an immediate thing, and I hardly ever deviate from it. And then the rest of my anxiety-ridden day is spent trying to achieve that, the thing that I have in my head, because I immediately get a reading of it in my head. This is how it should sound. And the rest of my day is spent trying to achieve that with varying degrees of success.
Well, I guess the reason I brought up Monk is because, like House, and maybe I'm extrapolating too much here, or stretching, as we say in radio, but like Monk, he has a quickly moving, easily bored mind, and he's filling spaces just to sort of keep himself engaged. And I just wondered, knowing that you're a pianist, if that somehow had come to you, or if it was something other than that.
I never actually discussed this with anyone. You're the first person. We're airing something for the very first time here. This is exciting stuff. Was it Monk who said there is no such thing as a wrong note?
Yeah.
I think it was. And that, in a way, I think that appeals to House, the quickness with which he is able to improvise and leap to another stage or leap to some parallel possible explanation for things. House, I think, also believes that there is no such thing as a wrong note. Everything in the right context at the right moment is a justifiable and correct move. It can be in the wrong hands, of course. You can make a terrible racket or you can kill the patient, depending on whether you're a musician or a doctor. But I think House is fundamentally, he does kind of approve of that there are no wrong notes. And if you're being true to the thought process, and the inspiration behind it, then any note is possible, and any note can be meaningful and right. Does that sound incredibly pretentious? Yeah.
I asked the question, so no, you're good with this. No,
okay.
I asked this because in The Usual Suspects and in some other movies that Singer has done, he was an editor who's also a musician. So his films even have kind of a musical component,
right,
to me.
And I think Brian Brian is a musician himself. And
yeah.
Yes, I think it is an important I'm going to come clean and admit that I actually find it very hard to watch the shows myself. I have only watched, I think, two of them, and therefore I'm slightly in the dark as to what the actual overt music that is used and the tone that gives to the show, and I don't know whether it chimes with what you're talking about. I hope that it does, but I'm actually not that familiar with the actual music, the notes that get played over the top of what we're doing in the show.
And, does watching get in your way a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. If I watched, I wouldn't come to work the next day. I would be just too critical. I'd get all tied up in knots thinking, oh, I mustn't do that, or why did I do that? I mean, as it is, I find, and I think lots of actors experience the same thing, I find myself devoting far too much energy to the mistakes I made the day before instead of preparing for the day to come. That's plainly an idiotic way to live one's life, but I just can't stop myself from doing it. Every night I go back, and instead of thinking, now, how am I going to do this thing tomorrow? I'm thinking, why did I do it that way today? I mean, and it's just not a profitable way of proceeding, but there we go. It's a failing of mine.
But working in serious television means that you have to be, to some extent, self-directed, don't you?
You have to watch yourself a bit, yeah. Yeah, which is not to say we're not extremely well served by, some very bright and very talented directors and producers and writer-producers who are on the set the whole time, and they're constantly guiding and suggesting and molding, and all these things are a terrific help. But at the same time, yes, an actor on series television, I think, has to take responsibility for the directions he takes, and has to be pretty self-sufficient, has to be able to feed himself and clean himself and oil his rifle, as it were. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Yeah. I do now. We'll okay. Take a break with Hugh Laurie, see if we can keep from mixing any more metaphors.
Right,
he's the star
you.
Of House.
I'm
Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
It's The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm in New York. My guest, Hugh Laurie, the star of House MD, is at KCRW in Santa Monica. I guess one of the things that sort of strikes me about your work, and I'm thinking about the sort of amazingly distracted Prince George and Blackadder, is a kind of concentration that you use as an actor. And here, in House certainly, it's an ability to sort of shut things out. And is that something that sort of jives with what you do as an actor, you think?
That's an awfully difficult question. I mean, the thing is, I try to think as little as possible about my own. I even hesitate to use the word process because that sounds like I have one. I don't have one. I don't have a process. I only really have an instinct, and I try not to. I sort of want to keep it that way. I don't want to think too hard about why certain things might work better than others, because I think these things can evaporate so quickly. If you think you have a strength, the moment you decide that you have a strength, it seems to me, and you decide that it's something you can play to, I think you risk it immediately turning into a weakness. I mean, the one advantage I suppose I had right from the beginning was that I do feel that I understood who this guy was very quickly. The first, you know, almost the first page I read, I thought, I think I know who this is. I can't say familiar because I'd never read anything like it. Genuinely, I'd never read anything like it. I mean, besides Sherlock Holmes, I can't think of any in the television world. I can't think of any comparisons, really useful comparisons. But at the same time, it felt comfortable. I just thought, yes, I know. I think I know who this guy is and why he is the way he is. Doesn't mean I can explain it to you, of course. But it felt familiar. Just felt familiar and comfortable. In something I could just get into very quickly. When I read the scripts, I do feel almost immediately that I can feel lots of avenues closing. I think there is only one road to be taken with this scene, and only one way to do this. I'm not sure that I'm capable of doing it, but I'm going to try because this is the way it has to be. And maybe that it also is a factor within the playing of a scene itself, that the character of House is able to just focus on a single thing and concentrate in a way that other people are not always able to do.
I guess I'm struck by concentration only because, not just say we're talking to Hugh Laurie, the Emmy-nominated star of House MD. It's The Treatment. I say that because even given the sort of the realistic medical setting, House gets more entrances than almost any TV star I can think of. Yeah, and so what I'm struck by when you make one of those entrances into a shot is the sort of the concentration that you bring to bear.
Wow. I hadn't even thought of that. You've been keeping a tally of entrances.
I'm sorry. I watched. I won't do it anymore.
Well, I go back to my first response, which is that I'm sort of reluctant to look under that particular stone in a way, because I feel both for myself and for the character of House, and also for the show, that if we ever start thinking, oh yes, this is how we do it, or we know that we can do this particular kind of thing well, it'll evaporate as the morning dew, and we will be left with no strengths at all. I think the more mysterious it is, and the longer it remains mysterious, the better I like it. I hadn't thought about the entrances. That's interesting.
Just because he's constantly moving into rooms. I just wonder if that was part of the fun for you getting to play this guy who comes striding in enormously confident in a cane and a pair of, you know, Converse All-Stars.
Yeah. I think the movement contributes, certainly. Well, I wonder now whether the writer David Shaw and all his colleagues, whether they sit and discuss this on a conscious level and say, you know, it's important that we must calculate a sense of movement here. We must contrive a sense of movement. Let's have House entering this scene, that scene, that scene. Or whether they just intuitively feel it that way. So maybe they even write it in the same way that I try and act it, which is they just have a feeling, an immediate feeling about what is right and an immediate knowledge of who this guy is. Because one of the most thrilling things for me is the knowledge that I have, the knowledge that the writers on this show are, we are of one mind. I mean, we all feel as if we know who this guy is, and we rejoice in who this guy is. And I think I've never felt yet, and we've done 25, 26 shows now, I've never felt that, you know, anybody's tugging any different directions. I feel as if we all... And it may be that they just intuitively feel that the movement and the entrances and the sort of theatricality that House revels in from time to time is, you know, just seemed right to them, seems right to me when I do it. I hope it is.
Well, it fascinates me too, because in one of the upcoming episodes for this season, Robin Sean Lennon even remarks about your basically being faster than everybody else and almost doing things hoping everybody else will catch up with you. And that seemed to be kind of the sort of one of the unstated themes of the show.
I suppose one of the premises is that in a cerebral sense, House is quick on his feet. This is a man whose brain moves at an enormous speed. Physically, of course, he is hampered. Although, actually, with a cane, I could still get down the corridor at a reasonable rate of knots. it may be that it is that tension between the fast brain and the slow body is part of the poignancy, I suppose, of the character. That the fast brain doesn't compensate for the slow body. If anything, it almost makes the slow body even more painful to him. The fact that he is able to apprehend his own limitations so clearly and able to imagine so clearly what it would be like to be able-bodied, what it would still be like, what it would be like to play a game of tennis or to run or... what I imagine might once have been a pretty intensely physical, possibly even athletic life that has been denied him, physical pleasures that have been denied him, and that maybe his quick brain sees that and imagines that and misses that all the more keenly. I think it is a tension there, yeah.
My guest is Hugh Laurie. He's the star of House MD. It's The Treatment. How much do you use of your own background, having a father who was a doctor? How much does that help you?
Well, it helps. I mean, my father, I must say right away, was a very, very, very different kettle of fish to Gregory House. He was the kindest and gentlest of men. He was a general practitioner in Oxford in England and qualified very, very late in life. He had a whole other career. He lived in Africa for nearly 20 years and came back and didn't qualify as a doctor till his mid-40s when he had already had two children, and he went to medical school and sat alongside 18-year-old students.
You noticed, obviously, the kind of discipline it took for your father to
absolutely.
Do that.
Absolutely. That was what I was going to say. That is the thing it really did give me. My relationship with my father gave me an enormous respect for the practice of medicine generally, actually. I respect and admire doctors in a way that I suppose the average... How can I put this? Non-doctor child, if you see what I mean, non-child of a doctor, possibly does not. I admire – that was one of the most hideous sentences I've ever heard.
Where were you educated again? I just want to make sure people know.
Actually, that was a complete lie, yes. I skipped sentence construction. I was out on the soccer field. You know what I mean. But it certainly gave me an enormous respect, almost reverence for the – hard, painstaking accumulation of knowledge, of the empirical observation, the fact that doctors derive principles from long and sometimes tedious study. They are denied the quick and easy pleasures of you know, chewing willow bark or prescribing crystals or acupuncture, all these. And I don't mean to disrespect any of these. Oh, my God, this is going to sound... I'm going to get into
trouble.
No,
you're in Los
here.
Angeles. It's okay for you to disrespect right. those kinds okay. of things. Okay. It's okay.
you know, the sort of things that will guarantee to turn your life around in a matter of days. And these cures and remedies are propagated by practitioners who've studied their subject for approximately a month. Doctors, on the other hand, I think have a humbler approach to the physical world. I think what is so remarkable about doctors, probably scientists generally, is that they begin from a premise of knowing nothing. We know nothing, so we study the problem until we do know a little bit about it. And when we do know, then we genuinely do know because we've seen it happen and we've seen it repeat itself. And from these repetitions, we extrapolate theories about how the world works or the human body works or whatever it might be. And I have a great respect for that approach to the physical world, the approach to the world generally. I admire it. I admire its doggedness and its rigor. I don't have either of those things. I'm not dogged and I'm not rigorous. I'm a flake. I'm a shortcutter. if there's an easy way of doing something, I'll find it.
Not based on this conversation. I wouldn't say that at all.
Not really?
No. Clearly, you're giving this a lot of thought. But it's funny, as we talk about this, and by the way, we're talking to Hugh Laurie, the star of House MD, the thing that makes this a real sort of 21st century character is, unlike a GP like your father, who probably made house calls, who went out and got to know his patients, House's assessment is based on the condition rather than the person.
Well, it isn't a practical way of practicing medicine, because human identity is all bound up with the body. It is who we are, and the way we respond to who we are has an effect on our body, and our body has an effect on who we are, and so on. And he knows that perfectly well. It is only because he's so twisted and damaged and bitter and ruminative, to use your first words, that he tries to avoid that connection between the person and the condition, and tries to just take refuge in the condition, in the problem alone.
It's essentially you're playing a guy who has more ways than anybody could think of distancing himself from other people, including dealing with the condition rather than the patient.
Right, yes. I mean, he is he's not at ease with people. You know, certainly with his co-workers, I think he can be intrigued by them, but intrigued at a distance, under glass, as it were. He's wants to know how his co-workers will react to certain things, and he will treat them like butterflies on the end of a pin. But in terms of actually engaging with them socially or emotionally as equals, as fellow human beings, there is something in him that prevents that from happening. I don't yet know, and I think the writers don't yet know, what that is. The puzzle is has yet to be completed, and I hope that continues to they continue to delay that completion for as long as they can, because I think if the puzzle is solved, then we don't have a show anymore. We'll just have a nice, friendly, healed man who has a puppy and pets small children. You know, I think it's. I think the damage is the thing. The damage is where the interest lies.
Well, we're out of time, so I hope you want to come back and talk about another piece of the puzzle at some point.
I would love to do that. But I will, of course, take some classes in elementary sentence construction before that happens.
It's too late now. Maybe one of those crystal wielders can help you with
that. Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure.
It's The Treatment. Our technical director from KCRW Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, who's also editing the show this week, with technical assistance from Paul Ruiz at Argo Network in New York. Producer is Mary Holdridge. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. Thank you.